Colossians says, chapter 1, verse 15, "The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him." And I believe Paul, just in case something gets added to the list that he didn't think of, he uses this construction to try to include everything you could ever think of. Verse 17, "He is before all things." Before all things. "And in him all things hold together." I have a family, as was mentioned earlier. My wife and I have a beautiful daughter. She turned 14 just last week, last Wednesday. She's beautiful. She's thoughtful, talented, a good musician, compliant, obedient. Then we have this other kid. There they are. There's my wife. Stunning. Her royal hotness. HRH. I know you have other HRHs visiting your country this week. William and whoever he married, I forget her name, and the baby. I know it's important. It's this week, right? Yeah, but this is the true HRH. Her royal hotness, Shelley. And there she is, Alexandra the beautiful, and then that other kid. That other kid is just turned 11, and for his birthday, I told him, "I'll take you anywhere you want to go for your birthday." So he chose a park called Six Flags in Atlanta, Georgia, because he's going through a list that he made some time ago of roller coasters that he wants to ride. These roller coasters are on his list for a reason. They're all the top 10 in the world for some reason. These are not just little kiddie rides. These actually rank. If you're a roller coaster person, there's like a ranking of roller coasters in the world, and he knows it. He knows the physics of it. He knows the G's, the speed, everything about them. So he tells me a few months ago, "I want to ride this ride. It's called the Kingda Ka." I'm new to this roller coaster business. I remember roller coasters when they're wooden rides that you go up and down for a few seconds. They scare you to death. You need a chiropractor when you're done. But then it's over. Didn't know what he was into. The Kingda Ka in New Jersey. Things I wish I would have known before I got on. One is that this thing catapults you without the benefit of getting you ready, like the little climb that you get, you know, the cluck, 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 cluck. You know what I'm talking about? The little climb that where you psychologically, emotionally prepare for what's next. These new super coasters don't do that. They just catapult you, and this one does this. It shoots you to 130 miles per hour. Google it. In 3.5 seconds. Once you have achieved this speed, it climbs to 456 feet. I got to get these numbers right because if he's listening, he'll correct me. 456 feet, you reach the apex of this ride, then you come down, and the ride is over. Yeah, 5 G's, that's an exaggeration, probably not that, but you about pass out. Here's what I should have noticed is that the line is really short. No one getting off when they're getting off. No one's high-fiving. No one's saying, "Let's do it again." People look like they've seen a ghost. Their hair's all back. They're stumbling away. Like, right outside the exit, there's people laying down, catching their breath and puking into the bushes and should have paid attention to all that. So when this thing speeds up, you lose you lose your sight because it's shaking so much. You can't really focus on anything. And then you leave the sound behind because you're traveling at several times the speed of sound. It's an exaggeration. You climb. And because it's so noisy, at the apex, when things slow down long enough for you to actually see what comes next, that's when you hear it. Once the sound catches up with you, you hear a whole lot of expletives, as you say, in this country. A whole lot of, help me, somebody. Mary, Mother of Jesus, you hear, help me, Barack Obama, Oprah Winfrey, Tom Cruise, Jose Rojas. And then you hear some people crying out to Jesus. No one's crying out to Jesus of Bethlehem as a baby. Everyone's crying out to Jesus of Nazareth, the full-grown Jesus, the anointed one, the one who calmed the storm, turned tables over, called the Pharisees a brood of vipers, that Jesus. The one you cried out to when you got that credit card bill and you didn't know how you were going to make that payment. The one you cry out to when you've been texting and driving at the same time and you lift your eyes to see the car in front of you is 10 feet away and you're going 100 kilometers per hour. The one you cry out to when you studied all night, you go to your exam and you realize, I don't understand anything on this piece of paper. Is this English? Chinese? Greek? Martian? The one you cry out to when you realize the one you've made commitments to is with someone else. The one you cry out to when a physician pronounces a diagnosis over you like it's a sentence. The one you cry out to when a physician pronounces a sentence over a loved one. That one. That's who they were crying out to on that day. You get real serious about who Jesus is when you're in need. No one on that day was crying out to a church. We're not churchians. We are Christians. They get real clear about that when they're in trouble, the people on the King Dakar. We don't claim that the church can change you, give you hope and a mission in the world. Jesus does that. This is the place where we hope we all find that Jesus that calls us to follow him. No one on that day was calling out to a worldview. Help us, Jesus, worldview. See, we diminish the gospel when we impoverish the gospel, when we demote Jesus to simply being a worldview. He's more than a worldview. A worldview is not going to get you through your next breakup. And a worldview is not going to save the world. A worldview is the result of our devotion to Jesus, who holds the world in his hands. No one was saying, help us, Scripture. No one said, Bible, save me from the King Dakar. No one said that that day. Why? Because we know that this is the written word that leads us to the living word. And feeding solely on the tree of knowledge will leave us impoverished again. We need to feed from the tree of knowledge and the tree of life. This is the written word that leads us to the living word. No one on that day was saying, help us, Holy Bible, save us, Holy Bible. They said, Jesus, help us, Jesus. No one said, help us, set of ethical and moral teachings. You know what I worry about? I worry about the fact that back home, the Tom's shoes that have been really popular for some time are kind of waning in popularity. And when everyone stops buying Tom's shoes, I don't know if you have them here yet, they're ugly shoes. But the good thing about it is if you buy a pair of those shoes, someone in somewhere else gets a free pair. So that's what makes them beautiful from the inside. They're waning in popularity, and guess what? When we don't like Tom's shoes anymore, poor people will still need shoes. What then? So we don't buy into social ethics and teachings and social justice. We buy into Jesus. We follow him, who tells us what matters in the world, so that whatever's next means that the poor will still have shoes and clean water and education and not fads. Can't have the kingdom without the king. The kingdom is the realm of the king. He tells us what's right to do in the kingdom. And on that day, no one was crying out to a pastor. No one said, "Help me, Pastor Eddie, Pastor Wayne, Pastor Mark." No one said that. They were crying out to the firstborn over all creation, the one who is over all things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, the one over thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, the one that is before all. They were crying out to that Jesus. And something is going on in this Colossian church, and I want to spend some time investigating with you this week. What does it mean to put Jesus above all things and before all things? What does it mean to do that? What does it mean for our personal lives? What does it mean for our church, our communities? What does it mean for the mission that God has called us in the world? What does it mean to say, before all things, Jesus is before all? What does it mean? Well, Paul is addressing a couple of issues happening in the Colossian church that I believe are things going on in our world. He's addressing the problem of a distracted church. The Colossians were distracted from what really matters, and I hope that the next week we can get really focused on what really matters. He's addressing this one issue, the fact that Jesus had been dethroned in the Colossian church. They demoted him. They have made him into something a little lesser than he actually was. They had other gods that were as important as Jesus. They were worshiping other beings alongside Jesus. And Paul means to say, no, that's not who we have in Christ. We have the fullness of God dwelling in the man who claimed to be the Son of God. So he's trying to correct that problem in the Colossian church. The gospel is radical precisely because the man Jesus made incredible claims. If we try to somehow make it more palatable to a world that finds us like a bunch of crazy people who believe in a Bronze Age myth about a man who claimed to be God, then we're cutting the gospel off at the knees. It needs to be radical. That's where the power is. Back to my son, Micah. I got a couple of stories about Micah. I hope you bear with me. I just love this boy so much. He's awesome. Him and his friend Gabriel were talking one day, and they were arguing with each other about whose dad was the best. I paid attention. I could hear him outside my window. They were talking to each other. Gabriel said, "My dad's the best." Micah says, "No, my dad's the best. I'm rooting for Micah." Gabriel goes, "My dad owns a motorcycle, Harley Davidson motorcycle." Micah has no clue what that means, but he knows, "I don't have a motorcycle, but I have a bike. A push bike, as you guys call it." So he goes, "My dad has a mountain bike." And in his mind, he's like, "He's got legs to pedal. You don't need no engine. The engine is like a sign of weakness. You need an engine to get you around. My dad's got these pistons of death to get around. What?" Gabriel goes, "Okay, round one, yours." "Round two, my dad drives a Mercedes." I was like, "Mercedes? That's a girl's name." "What kind of girly car does he got? Your dad need to drive around? My dad drives an Explorer." Explorer, that car is going places. Mercedes is going to the mall to get a latte. The Explorer is going out in the desert driving around like a man's car. Gabriel goes, yeah, well, my dad, this is like the language of 10-year-olds at the time, 9-year-olds at that time. Yeah, well, my dad owns his own multinational corporation. My God, I have no clue what that means. Gabriel doesn't know what that means either. He's just throwing out words he's heard at the dinner table. Micah goes, oh, yeah? I'm putting a stop to this, Micah says in his mind. My dad is Spider-Man. I walk outside, open the sliding glass door. I'm, hey, guys. Micah sees me come out and is like, oh, crud, he was listening. And he looks at Gabriel, looks at me like, please don't ruin this, please, you're Spider-Man. I look at Gabriel, I'm like, Gabriel, you must never tell anyone. And Gabriel knows that's ridiculous. That's not true, but yet he spent the next few weeks trying to get a glimpse at my wrists. And I would just go, shh. It is outrageous. The craziest claim that we Christians make is that there's a man who claimed to be God. And the moment we say, well, let's qualify that, we have stolen from the gospel the power that it has. We're taking it away from it. The power of the gospel is found exactly in the fact that the claims are absolutely crazy. Absurd. Really? Resurrected? What? Oh, man. And Paul is trying to do this with the Colossian church. He's saying, do not demote Jesus. He is before all things. That's where the power of the gospel lies, in the fact that we have a man who calls us to himself, not to a church, not to a worldview, not to a cause. He calls us to himself. I'll leave you with this thought. You know what Legos are? You love Legos. I don't know if there's any of you who are old, but some of you are oldies here. You remember the days when Legos were actually a bunch of pieces that they gave you, and you actually built things with them from your mind, your imagination? Wow. Listen, first the cheese bean thing, and now Legos? I'm moving here. You understand me. You get me. Yes. Right. There was a time when you were given a bucket full of pieces, and you were told, build something. And you went into your room and you spent hours going, ah, la, 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 and you build bizarre looking random things, but it was all coming from your mind. Nowadays, Micah is growing up with these sets. There's Star Wars, and there's Lord of the Rings, and there's Batman, and there's the Lego movie, which hasn't made it here yet. I'm sorry. It's really kind of neat. Apparently made here in Australia. There's all these sets. And you have to build whatever the set says you have to build. You understand? You're given a picture of the thing you're going to build. And if you try to build something else, it won't work because you're always going to run out of pieces. And so what happened with Micah is that he began to build stuff. And he would always run out of stuff that he needed. If I could just have 5 more of the 6 long pieces with the, and you know, what I could do with that. And he would try often to just build things from his mind anyway, and you'd end up with like a part of a helicopter attached to a dog and a castle over here and the Death Star on this side. like similar beasts of the apocalypse. You'd build these things that you could... could take with you and go, let's turn to Revelation. And one day, because I had never taken him to this place, one day we went to the mall where there's a Lego store. The Ontario Mills near us has a Lego store. Micah had never been in there before. So we walk into this place. They have a couple of, you walk in there. You have those here? No, you don't have them here? Oh, they're fantastic. You go in there and I want to prepare you for what you're seeing. I want to explain what you're seeing. You walk in and on every side of you, there are hundreds and hundreds of sets. You could take this dragon thing, and you could take, you know, but once you pick one of those boxes, you can only build that one thing. And Micah walks through these things going, ah, oh, if I could have that box and that box and that box, life would be complete. Now, once you go inside, I think the next shot shows you a little more detail of, you know, they've got all these made up things now, chimera and all these crazy things. And then, but some of you have your eyes on the back wall, don't you? Yeah. Micah walks back there. He could not believe his eyes. He stood there trembling. I mean, I saw him just going back and forth. And in his little mind, I know what he was thinking. Where have you been? The things that I could do. A brilliant writer says that what Paul is doing in Colossians is painting a picture of Jesus that is so cosmic, so big, so broad, it exhausts the mind of mere mortals. Micah's mind was exhausted by what he was seeing this week. I pray that you will also find the Jesus of Colossians exhausting your mind.